You may ask, how did this tradition get started? I'll tell you. I don't know. But it's a tradition. And because of our traditions, every one of us knows who he is and what God expects him to do.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Let's Talk Torah. I am Rabbi Tzvi Jacobson with NRM Streamcast, and we'll spend our time talking Torah, learning stuff, and having fun while we learn. You can always send your questions and comments to our mailbag at letstalktorah@gmail.com, and of course, I will answer as many as I can, or you can go to our webpage at letstalktorah.net. Let's Talk Torah, no apostrophes, letstalktorah.net. And you could check the archives, the new shows, leave questions, leave answers. No, don't leave answers. I do the answers. But you can leave questions. You can, of course, hit the all-important donate button to help facilitate what we do here, help us move forward and move on. It's always appreciated. We have different levels for you. Whatever works, of course, is always greatly appreciated. And if you'd like a shout-out, we can, of course, do that as well. Purim is now in the rear view mirror, and Purim is great. I love Purim. I have this great gold jacket. I have a brown derby. My wife says I'm too old for it. I shouldn't be wearing it. I'm not a little kid anymore. And I say, come on, it's Purim. I said, we have to get her a costume. But in any case, just a few things to think about, what Purim was about. There's four mitzvos, four commands we do during the day, and two of them are heavily involved in increasing friendship. There's giving charity, and there's like sending food packages to friends, relatives. And as I've told you multiple times, in my neighborhood, the children are giving to their friends. So if we give out, personally, 20, 25 food packages, my kids could be giving 20 or 25 each. And it's the most beautiful thing. It is just totally fantastic. They're into it. And they know straight out. My own children say, we're doing this because when I give somebody something, and they all give each other the same thing. It's all the same can of soda and the same bag of chips or whatever it is. There's maybe a lollipop. There's not much different from one bag to the next. Nobody cares. All they care is that somebody gave me something. And I gave someone something. And that by itself is beautiful. So it is interesting. I had two different books I was using around Purim just to get into the feel, get a deeper understanding of the day. And one of the famous ideas that people talk about is Yom Kippur and Purim. Now, if you listen to the words very carefully, you have Purim, and Yom, which means a day, Ki, which means like Purim. So Yom Kippurim, or Yom Kippur, and Purim seem to be the same word. Not only that, what you really got to figure out is if you translate Yom Kippur, which really comes from the word, we're playing with the word. Really, the word Kippur means forgiveness, but we're allowed to play. And Kippur means like Purim, so there's allowed to be a secondary meaning. The problem with that secondary meaning is it makes, if Yom Kippurim is like Purim, that means it's only like, but it's not as good. How do you understand such a concept? So it's interesting, both Yom Kippur and Purim are holidays that we say in the prayers are days to create friendship. But we do it two different ways. On the Day of Atonement, on Yom Kippur, I ask you for forgiveness. So if I've ever insulted you, done something wrong to you, I've offended you, I come and I ask you to forgive me, which automatically creates a friendship. You care enough to to ask forgiveness, and hopefully you mean it. So that's, you know, we're going to try to patch things up. But it's, I don't want to say it's not positive. It is positive because you are actively going and asking. But you're saying, I did something wrong. I'm sorry, I did something wrong. On Purim, I am actively creating the friendship. I'm not trying to patch it up. I'm trying to say, let me give you something. What happened over here? Let me give you something, and that will increase or create the friendship. So according to that, it comes out Purim is much more powerful in that way. And it gives the day a nice feeling. It just, you know, this is a day we're trying to be together. We have get-togethers, and whether it's family or friends, and we have festive meals, and we sing, and there's music, and the boys are going from house to house, and they're dancing and singing, and everyone's just so happy. It's just a beautiful day. You know, there's nothing else to say. So we've started the book of Leviticus. Right? We're actually two Torah portions in there. We're into the Torah portion of Tzav. But the first two Torah portions of Leviticus are almost identical. I told my class today, the Torah portion of Vayikra is how I bring my sacrifice. I bring my animal and have it slaughtered and all this stuff that's done, and I get my forgiveness or my thank you to God. While this week's Torah portion, Tzav, is the Kohen, the priest's side of the sacrifice, all the things that he's responsible for. So it's true that they're extremely similar and a lot of repetition, but we're actually talking to different people. So the first thing we need to think about is the word sacrifice in Hebrew. It's a great word. The word is karbon, but if you take the first three letters, it's the word is karav. Karav means to bring close. So generally you understand I'm bringing this animal as a sacrifice close. I'm bringing it to the temple, and then the priest will take care of the whole business. But really, really, they explain it's to bring me close. My goal, my attitude is when I'm bringing this sacrifice is I am becoming closer to God. Not because I gave God a present. God doesn't need my present. It's not like there's no old idol worshippers that, like, you know, God needs energy, so you gotta give him these sacrifices for energy. That's ridiculous. God doesn't need my sacrifice. He's fine. If I don't bring anything, it doesn't really matter. It's for me. The purpose of the sacrifice is to bring me close to God. So how do I do that? So one of the ways they explain the sacrifice is, and that's really what happened by Abraham and Isaac and the binding of Isaac. So God tells Abraham, don't kill Isaac. And Abraham sees the ram, and he takes that ram and he slaughters the ram, but he says the slaughtering of the ram should be like I slaughtered my son. And the cutting it up and the burning and throwing the blood, it's all in place of my son. That's what we're supposed to be thinking when we bring a sacrifice. Really, if I did something wrong, which, I mean, if is a pretty strange question, a strange statement, not if, but we all do things wrong. No one is perfect. So I tell God, you know, you should kill me, right? Right in front of me. I'm right in front of you. I do things wrong. How dare I? Who do I think I am? So here's this animal sacrifice, and I am going to look at it as if I am being sacrificed, and that will help me repent. And obviously by repenting, that will bring me closer to God. And that is an amazing thought. But I would like to take this in a little bit different direction, because even the word sacrifice is a very interesting word. In other words, yes, sacrifice means I'm taking this animal and I'm slaughtering it and throwing the blood on the altar and burning the animal. All true. But when we use the word sacrifice, right, in regular lingo, when we say the word sacrifice, what do we mean? Generally speaking, I'm giving something of myself. I'm giving something up of myself. It's not, it doesn't automatically mean an animal sacrifice. It really means I'm doing something. So for example, there's a sacrifice called the flower sacrifice, where a person can bring either flour and oil, or he can bake it into matzah, or he can even make it, well, whether it's thin, whether it's thick, whether it's crispy. There's different pans and ways of doing it. The person has a choice how he wants to do it. So the language of the verse says a soul who brings a sacrifice of flour. So the question is, this is the only time we use the language. Usually we say man. You say Adam for man. We say Ish, which means a man. But we don't say a soul. Why do we say a soul? So what you have to recognize is who is bringing this flower sacrifice, right? If I'm going to a temple and I'm a wealthy man, I want to bring a big, humongous cow, bull, something big, right? Something that makes a statement. I'm a wealthy man. I can afford it. I got to show God I'm willing to give him something I can afford, right? Goes back to Cain and Abel, Cain and Hevel, that Hevel brought sheep and Cain brought flax, and God accepted Hevel's sacrifice because if you can afford it, right, it's insulting to be cheap, right? You're being cheap with God? Right, that's ridiculous. So who's bringing the flower sacrifice? The answer is a poor person. Why is a poor person bringing a flower sacrifice? Because he obviously has no money. Right? So how did he get the money if he's poor? Right? Where did he get the money from? He didn't have a credit card. Right? So where did he get the money from to bring a flower sacrifice? The answer is he didn't eat supper for a couple of days. It was however much flour it takes to make my bread for supper, right? Because what's a poor person eating already, right? They got flour, grind it up, add some water, and they'll put something on it for taste, but that's their main supper. They're having meat, not having chicken, right? What's the poor guy having? And instead he says, I very much want to bring a sacrifice. I want to thank God for all the good he's done for me. But I don't have any money. Okay. I won't eat supper for the next couple days, and the amount of flour that I will save over the next couple days, again, I don't know how many days it takes. I guess I have to do the math. But however many days it takes to make the amount of flour necessary, that's how many days I'm not going to have supper. I'm going to put it all away. I'll bring it to the temple. I'll bring a sacrifice. So the guy who's bringing the flour sacrifice is amazing, because he's not eating supper for a week. That's a sacrifice, right? That's that English word sacrifice, that I am giving of myself. I didn't eat for a few days. That's a soul, right? God looks at it like he brought his whole soul. So that's a real sacrifice. So now, with that being understood, there's something quite fascinating. The first word in the book of Leviticus is Vayikra. It says God called to Moses, Vayikra. The language kara, a very beautiful way of speaking. Moses was embarrassed. He says, God, you're going to say this word kara Vayikra on me? It's too much. Use the word Vayikar. Now, Vayikar is a very cold word. God said, I'm not using Vayikar. It's not happening. So they made a compromise. The aleph, the last letter of the word Vayikra, is teeny. Instead of being a full-fledged letter, it's a small letter. If you ever open up a Torah scroll, you go to the beginning of Leviticus, very easy to notice that it's a small letter. It happens to be that the first verse of Leviticus, that pasuk Vayikra, Hashem HaMoshe, that verse in many Orthodox day schools is the first verse we teach children. When we're their kindergarten age, whatever age they are, that's the first verse. Then we'll go to the book of Genesis, start from the beginning. But that Vayikra is the first verse, because that Aleph stands for one, it's little. So it's representative of small children, of young children. And if we want our children to be successful, here comes that great word, we have to sacrifice. So it's a very interesting phrase. The phrase is, Hizhiru ba'aniyim, be careful with the poor people. Shemehem teitzei Torah, because from them, Torah scholarship will come. Why do we say Torah scholarship will come from the poor? It can't come from rich. It can't come from middle income. It has to come from the poor. So the answer like this. Of course, anybody could be a Talmudic scholar. Everyone could be smart. Anyone could sit and study. There's no rules and regulations of exactly who's allowed to study and who's not studying and who will be that great leader, who won't be that great leader. It has nothing to do with anything. What it has to do is, what do the children see at home? And this is true in all areas, but education is a great one. What do my children see that I'm willing to give up so they could be successful? Do they see me willing to give anything up? Or my life is going to be my life. I'm going to live my life the way I feel like living. And it's nice that I have children. And my children can, of course, I want them to go to school. It's very important. And I tell them it's very important they study. Now, how do I show my children that it's very important that they study? Do I give anything up to make sure that my child can study? Am I willing to do anything? In a poor house, if it's important to the parents, the child say you could see it because they're poor. And for certain things, they're going to have to give up certain comforts so that their children can study. Do the children see it? Do the children not see it? If I have a child that's studying and he needs some money, so they know that it's costing me more than the rich guy down the block, because that guy, who cares, right? Yeah, I even had a story with my son the other day. So I have a certain coffee that I like. And I make my monthly order, and I basically have enough to last me in a month. I'm not sure. Sometimes I have a little bit extra. Sometimes I have a lot extra, so I'll cancel an order. But my son, who likes to study very late Friday night, it's very important to him, so he likes to take some coffee, no problem. But, you know, if he takes like 3 or 4 capsules, all of a sudden my calculation, my monthly calculation is going to be way off, because he's not taking 1 or 2 a week. He's taking, you know, 4 at least a week, could be 5 a week. All of a sudden you just took 2 sleeves, which I didn't order. And like every normal person, I got a little nervous. I said, 4? We're taking 4. I need so many 4. Like, we're taking 4. And, you know, I felt bad about it. So I went back and I said, you know what? I apologize that I said anything to you. But 2 things. First of all, we have to get you a container. You're not walking around with 4 cups of coffee. That's silly. But I said, you want to study and you need the coffee to stay up late. No problem. I'm just going to go order more. It's important for me that you study. It's inconvenient that I'm going to run out. Come on, just go order more. Like, how silly could I be? Right? He's a good kid. So, does it cost more money? Of course it costs more money. Does he need it? Meh, he likes it. He could just take regular Taster's Choice for the same price, which we have tons of at home. But he likes it. Why? I can't make him feel good? Can't show him that I care? And again, it's not a major sacrifice. It's a few dollars. It's not like, you know, it's not the end of the world. But that's not really the point. The point is I have to show him that you want, go ahead. I'm not going to run out. I'm just going to go order more. And I made sure right away to order more. It's probably by my front doorstep. Mark's going to wonder where we're putting all this coffee. But he wants it. Let's keep it simple. So the famous story. There was a boy, a city in Europe somewhere. I can't tell you where. City in Europe. And the boy comes. In those days, you didn't have a regular school. So you would have a group of parents would hire a teacher for their children. And you would pay monthly. Each parent would pay. If you didn't pay, the teacher said, I'll find somebody else to fill the slot. So the teacher sent an envelope home with the boy and told the parents, the note said, look, you haven't paid for 3 months. If you're not going to pay me within a week, I'm filling the slot with somebody else. You'll have to find another way to educate your kid or let them go to work. You know, not everybody had to study in those days. So the father saw the note and he wasn't sure what to do. And he goes to synagogue that night and he hears that the wealthy guy in town is willing to pay a lot of money. His son is getting married and the house is built, but there's no oven. And it seems that year was a bad year for getting supplies maybe or building ovens, whatever it was a bad year. And that's what the father of this boy who brought home the note, he built ovens. So he went over to the wealthy guy and he says, okay, I'm willing to pay. I'll put in the oven this week. And the guy gave him the advance. And the father comes home and he takes apart the family oven. He takes apart now. And if you lived in Europe a couple hundred years ago, the oven wasn't just for cooking. You could make a little fire. The oven kept the house warm. I mean, these were special ovens in the house. You needed special bricks. And you needed the bricks so that you could warm up the house. So the father basically made an announcement, and he said, we want our son to study, so here's the 3 months that we owe, and here's 3 months in advance. So what do you think that boy feels when he's going back? The person telling over the story was much older by the time he's telling over the story. He's telling about his life. He was a big Torah scholar, Talmudic scholar. He said that, my parents cared. My Torah study was so important, they were willing to take apart our oven and not to go buy food. It's not like we had that much food in the house. They were taking apart our oven so that they had the money to pay the teacher. Sometimes I wonder, the Orthodox day school system is amazing, except we can't raise tuition from everybody because people don't have the money and people won't pay full tuition. So therefore the salaries are automatically for teachers are lower because we can't get the salary, because we can't raise the amount of money we would like to raise. So, but there are parents that will do whatever they could to pay as much as possible. If their children see the sacrifice, it makes the value of their Torah study that much more amazing because it matters. So I know my time is running out over here. So I saw let's skip to this story. Okay, so another interesting story I saw. It's about children and teaching children and making a mark, right? Letting the children know how much we care. So Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky was taken on a tour of, no, Shmuel Kamenetsky, I'm sorry. One of them was brought on a tour of his son's school. His son made a school in, I believe, Rockaway, and he wanted to bring his father through the school, and his father comes through, and he gets to the kindergarten classroom. And in the kindergarten classroom, he noticed that the mezuzah, right? The mezuzah is the parchment with the two paragraphs of Shema. It goes on the doorpost, and he saw it was lower than the normal where it's supposed to be. As normally, it's at the level of an adult male's shoulder. But little kindergarten children can't reach to give it a kiss. So in this kindergarten class, it was like all the way down, like in the middle of the door. So Kamenetsky said, like, what's going on over here? Like, why are you doing this? So they said, well, we want to make it easier for the children to reach it. So he says, better lift up the child than lift down the mezuzah. We'll have to talk about the lesson of this another time. The music is playing. Hope you enjoyed it, short and sweet. Thank you, of course, for the wonderful sponsors and listeners. I can't do it without you. Thank you to the production team. We have Alan in the back today. Hope I've left you some food for thought. Until next time, I am Rabbi Tzvi Jacobson. You've been listening to Let's Talk Torah and Aaron's Dreamcast. Until next time, don't forget to think about it. For the world we're gonna make. There's a house we can build. Every room inside is filled with things from far.